Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is December 2nd, 2012. I'm rested and ready to go after being away for a week. That means it's been 2 weeks since my last podcast. Were you going into the SGM withdrawal? I was down in Florida visiting the House of Mouse and Universal Studios on a family holiday. In fact, that's where I came up with the title of today's podcast, Better Out Than In.
Better out than in, I always say.
Today we're going to be talking about simple cutaneous abscesses. And as always, I'll start with a case presentation. A 45-year-old man presents to the emergency department with a 3-centimeter abscess under his left arm. There's no surrounding cellulitis, he's not an IV drug user, and has never had an abscess before. You make the diagnosis of an uncomplicated, superficial cutaneous abscess. You know that antibiotics are probably not necessary after an IND. However, the patient gets a little nervous after you describe the IND process. He wants to know if there's anything you can do to make the procedure less painful and if packing is really necessary. Your inside voice says one of the 5 things. Why do men have such low pain tolerance? What a little girly man. That was my best Schwarzenegger. 2. Puss. Time for lunch. 3. Suck it up, buttercup. 4. Of course there's something we can do regarding oligoanalgesia. And 5. To pack or not to pack? That is the question. So some background information on simple cutaneous abscesses. Well, they're common. You know it and I know it. A lot of them come into the emergency department. In 2005, a study showed that there was 3.3 million, yes, I'm holding up my pinky to my mouth, million ED visits for cutaneous abscesses. And the numbers are increasing faster than the total number of ED visits. So can we make this procedure more comfortable for this man? Well, let's look at buffering lidocaine. And does buffering lidocaine make it less painful to inject? Well, there's a Cochrane systematic review on this that was published in 2010. It was by Cepeda et al., and it was called Adjusting the pH of Lidocaine for Reducing Pain on Injection. Wow, I like the title already. It tells me everything. But let's dive into the details. So what population were they looking at? Well, it was adults and children. So they were looking at both little kids and grown-ups. And it was in need of local anesthetic for an epidural catheter insertion, an IV cannulation, or a small surgical procedure. So not specifically looking at cutaneous abscesses, but looking at providing local anesthesia. There was a total of 23 trials with just over 1,000 patients. Now the intervention was buffering lidocaine. Yep, buff up the lidocaine. And what you did was you took the 8.4 sodium bicarb solution. So you took your standard sodium bicarb and took 1 mL out of the bottle and added it to 9 mL of either 1% or 2% lidocaine with or without epi. And we know from previous podcasts that you can use epinephrine in the tips of anything. As stated before, the studies included were 23. So there was 23 studies in this systematic review that Cochrane did. 10 of them were parallel studies, and 13 of them were crossover trials. 8 of the 23 studies, though, had moderate to high risk of bias. Now let's look at the main result. One of the main results was put in a forest plot. So on the website, go to the actual podcast and click on it, and you'll see the forest plot. They included the 8 studies on patient preferences with IV cannulation. And looking at those 8 studies, you can see that all of the boxes are on the right-hand side of the line favoring buffering the lidocaine. Now, the sizes of the boxes determine how big or how many patients were in the study size. And then those whiskery things coming off are the error bars. And if the error bars cross one, it's not supposed to be significant. But when you line up all 8 studies, you look down at the bottom, and there you see the diamond in the rough. Yes. That diamond, Are there too many Disney quotes here? Yes, you see the diamond in the rough. And that diamond in the rough shows the total population size by the size of the diamond. And it shows that the odds ratio was 3.0 in favor of buffering the lidocaine for patient preferences. So patients said it was better to buffer the lidocaine. And the error bars were fairly tight between 2.2 and 4.2, so not crossing 1. So the Beam commentary on this systematic review from Cochrane was that local injections of lidocaine is common in the ED. Yep, do it all the time. These injections can be painful experiences for both the patient and the doctor trying to do the injection. And it's thought that the acidity of the solution, the acidity of the lidocaine, its pH of these solutions is between 3.5 and 7, and that's what's causing the pain. And in this review, when they included the 23 studies, knowing that 8 out of the 23 lacked allocation concealment, whoop, well, there we go. I'm bringing up an EBM term. Yep, got to sneak it into every podcast. So what's allocation concealment? Well, allocation concealment is, quote, a technique used to prevent selection bias by concealing the allocation sequence from those assigning participants to the intervention group until the moment of assignment. In other words, allocation concealment prevents researchers from, unconsciously or otherwise, influencing which participants are assigned into each given group. Regardless of the allocation concealment being more prone to bias, the buffering the lidocaine is a quick and inexpensive step with no reported adverse effects or toxicity, and it can reduce the burning sensation experienced by some patients. Those patients might appreciate the extra effort you take in buffering the lidocaine. So hey, take the time and buffer your lidocaine. Okay, let's move on and talk about antibiotics for IND. Now, I kind of alluded to that in the case presentation, saying they probably weren't necessary. But the question always comes up, do you have to use antibiotics when treating a simple cutaneous abscesses, especially in the age of, MRSA? Well, there's a reference for it, but it is from 2007, so it's 5 years old, and it's Hacken and Everett. Are antibiotics necessary after incision and drainage of a cutaneous abscesses? And it was published in the Annals of Emergency Medicine. The review looked at the literature from English language articles only, and we've talked about English language restrictions before, from 1966 to current, using human subjects. The initial search found close to 1,400 articles. Wow, it sounds like a lot. But they were limited to only 5 original randomized control trials and 1 abstract dealing specifically with this question. Now, the intervention was an IND with or without antibiotics, and the results were from 3 randomized control trials that they used and 2 prospective cohort trials and 1 retrospective cohort study. Guess what? I just slid in another EBM concept, and that's on cohort studies. And so I'm just going to digress here for a second and say, cohort studies, quote, data are obtained from groups who have been exposed or not exposed to the new technology or factors of interest. No allocation of exposure is made by the researcher, and best for the study, the effect of predictive factors on an outcome. There are some advantages and some disadvantages to cohort studies. One advantage is they're ethically safe, but one disadvantage is, you know, there's no randomization present. If you want to know more, click on the hyperlink and you can dive deeper into this subject. Okay, enough of that slipping in that EBM stuff. But the 3 randomized control trials, 2 prospective cohort trials, and 1 retrospective cohort trial. And remember, this was from thousands, almost 1,400 trials. They got it down to these 6. All of these studies suggested that antibiotics were not necessary after an appropriate IND and packing. More importantly, significant portions of the more recent studies had that scary, MRSA in the patient population. And even these patients did not need antibiotics. No adverse events were noted in either treatment or placebo arms. Now, there were some limitations. The limitations from this is, obviously, there are very little high-quality evidence surrounding this topic area. You know, 1,400 trials with only 6 that could be included here. which is mildly surprising given the 3.3 million visits to the emergency department in 2005 for these types of problems. And the six studies that were in this review had less than 1,000 total enrolled patients. When we looked at this from the Beam perspective, we were able to find three more randomized control trials which weren't included, and it added another 752 subjects, and they also refuted the needs for antibiotics and abscess management. No study clearly defined abscess, so that was another limitation. And finally, there are no comments about the treatment choices when there is an overlying cellulitis. So the Beam commentary, well, a limited body of evidence suggests that antibiotics are not needed after IND and packing of cutaneous abscesses, even in the era of increasingly prevalent MRSA. The current review offers no guidance on the treatment in the presence of overlying cellulitis. The choice to treat or not to treat with antibiotics may need to be balanced between the guidelines from the Infectious Disease Society of America, which I've attached as a hyperlink, and the CDC, suggesting treatment with increased MRSA risk versus concerns about antibiotic misuse, increasing resistance, and MRSA proliferation. If choosing to treat suspected MRSA patients, the key issue is to remember to avoid using cefalexin, which doesn't treat MRSA effectively, and to use clindamycin, doxycycline, or trimethoprim sulfamethanazole. The Beam bottom line, as usual with EBM, the answer is, it depends. The evidence does not suggest using antibiotics routinely in simple cutaneous abscesses, even in the era of MRSA. Individual clinicians may want to factor in specific patient comorbidities and history, among other things, in their decision whether or not to prescribe antibiotics. For more information about antibiotic use with INDs, check out our 2008 publication done by a Beam faculty member in EP Monthly. Interestingly, I just noticed that the famous Dr. Richard Bucata of Emergency Medicine Abstract made the same or similar conclusion 4 years later in September of this year in his EP Monthly article on the very same topic. So now we're going to look at the third issue, and that was packing abscesses. And the question is routine packing of a simple cutaneous abscess necessary after an IND? And the reference for this topic is O'Malley et al. Routine packing of simple cutaneous abscesses is painful and probably unnecessary. Wow, I like this title too. It tells you the answer. And it was in the Academic Emergency Medicine Journal in 2009. The population they looked at was adults in the ED presenting with cutaneous abscesses requiring incision and drainage. They had a total of 48 patients. The intervention was IND with standard packing of the abscess cavity, and the control was IND without packing the abscess cavity. The primary outcome was the need for intervention at 48 hours, and a secondary outcome was pain and wound evaluation. They had a whole host of exclusion criteria, and I encourage you to look at those. Our Beam commentary, though, because this is just a pilot study, and again, I don't know why they always do these studies on pilots and not flight attendants, but it's a pilot study. Boom-tsh. Anyways, this pilot study is a single randomized control trial, and it challenges the surgical dogma commonly practiced in EDs everywhere. It appears that the study was well-designed and implemented, but there are some deficiencies, specifically both allocation and ascertainment bias should have been minimized. There was also a lack of information about prognostic factors by the group and no, consort statement. Yes, another EBM term. Click on that for the hyperlink. It's just one of those things we look at when evaluating studies. Some of these deficiencies may have been more to do with editors than with the investigators, although as a single randomized control trial, the evidence is not sufficient to widespread change the standard of care. However, it's enough to make us think and reconsider our options in treating simple cutaneous abscesses, and it should also serve as a catalyst for funding for trials addressing the same question. So what's our Beam bottom line? Routine packing of simple cutaneous abscesses may not be necessary. And if you want more information on packing abscesses, check up the write-up I did for EP Monthly on this issue. So where is all this heading? When we look at the literature, we found many different reviews addressing INDs. check out the variety of treatments that were there. They had plus or minus antibiotics, plus or minus packing, and plus or minus primary closure, sewing it up after. Wow. Anyways, there's a nice table summarizing all of that. A recent systematic review actually looked at primary closures of abscesses post-IND, and it was by Singer et al. And they concluded, quote, studies from four countries suggest that primary closures of incised and drained abscesses result in faster, yes, faster healing and similar low abscess recurrence rates than after secondary closures. These studies provide a foundation for which clinical trials can be conducted in the United States. End of quote. So to summarize, for IND of simple cutaneous abscesses, be kind, buffer your lidocaine, address the oligoanalgesia. Number two, IND is the solution with abscesses.
Better out than in, I always say.
And not routine antibiotics. And three, no packing required. So what's the case resolution? Well, you try to address the problem of oligoanalgesia in the emergency department by buffering your lidocaine. You have an informed discussion about antibiotics and make the mutual decision not to subject him to the harm with limited support for benefit from antibiotics. You explain the incomplete data doesn't support packing and, duh, he decides to forego wound packing. You discharge him with instructions to return in 2 days for a wound reevaluation. At the same time, you wonder, whether someday routine follow-up might be proven not to be necessary as well. Well, that ends the podcast. Not to forget, though, our Keener contest. Last week's winner was Lauren, and she's a fourth-year medical student from Florida. According to her Twitter profile, she is passionate about emergency medicine, both public and global health, and free open access to medication. Lauren quickly identified the NNT, or the number needed to treat with ondansetron to prevent further vomiting in children, was, my favorite number, 5. I was told that I had to make these questions a little bit harder. So here's this week's question. What is oligoanalgesia? I specifically didn't define it during the podcast. Look it up and email your answer to me at thesgem@gmail.com or go to the contact us link at the top of the homepage. Use Keener contest in the subject line. First one to email me the correct answer will win a cool skeptical prize. If you want to cut that KT window down to less than 1 year, sign up for Ski Beam 2013, February 4th to 6th at Silver Star, BC. Meet some of the Beam faculty and enjoy some great CME holidays. Well, that's it. So like us on Facebook. I need more likes on Facebook. Follow the SGM on Twitter. And, of course, be skeptical of anything you were taught, even if you were taught it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.